As board chair, Bill Larson, I'll call to order the water management board meeting scheduled for July 12th, 2023. I'd like to take the roll call.
Bjork.
Here.
Gomez.
Here.
Dixon. Peggy Dixon. Holzbauer.
Peggy's on there, but it looks like.
Leo, are you on?
Here.
And Larson.
Here. I would like to welcome everyone participating at today's meeting or listening online. This meeting is streaming live on SD.net, a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. The meeting is also being recorded, and the audio will be made available online following the meeting. To find the audio recording online, do a web search for South Dakota Boards and Commissions Portal. Follow the link and select the name of the board. For the benefit of our online listeners, I request that all participants, including board members, please identify yourself when speaking. Anyone participating remotely is reminded to keep their microphones or phones muted at all times unless speaking. The first item on the agenda is the annual election of officers. We have a motion to appoint a board chair.
Mr. Larson, this is board member Comets. I'll make a motion to appoint Bill Larson as chair.
Do I have a second?
Ms. Bjork, second that
motion. I'll second.
Okay. Hearing second, the motion to appoint Bill Larson as board chair for the coming year is adopted. Can we have a roll call, please?
Bjork.
Aye.
Comets.
Aye.
Dixon. Holzbauer.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Excuse me, Brenda. Sorry, this is Peggy. I was muted. I voted aye.
Thank you.
Aye, thank you. Next position would be pre-hearing chair. Anyone like to make a motion to appoint a pre-hearing chair?
Mr. Chairman, this is Bjork. I make a motion to appoint Rodney Freeman as pre-hearing chair.
Do I have a second?
Dixon, second.
Motion is adopted to appoint Mr. Rodney Freeman as pre-hearing chair for the board. Can I have a roll call, please?
York.
Aye.
Comas.
Aye.
Dixon.
Aye.
Holzbauer.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye. The other officers we need to elect?
Secretary.
Vice chair. Yeah, vice chair and secretary.
Okay. We have a motion to appoint anyone as vice chair.
Mr. Larson, this is board member Comas. May I ask for a reminder who our current vice chair is?
John?
Jim Hutmaker is the current vice chair.
Your mic is on. Mr. Chairman, I will make a motion to appoint Mr. Hutmaker as our vice chair.
I have a second to appoint Mr. Hutmaker as the vice chair.
Comas.
Dixon, second.
We have the roll call to adopt the motion. To...
Aye.
Thomas.
Aye.
Dixon.
Aye.
Wolfbauer.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye. Mr. Jim Huckmaker is appointed as vice chair for the upcoming year. Do I have a motion to appoint a secretary for the board?
This is Dixon. I make a motion to elect Leo Holzbauer as secretary.
Do I have a second to appoint Leo Holzbauer as secretary?
York, second.
Motion is adopted. Can I have a roll?
York.
Aye.
Comas.
Aye.
Dixon.
Aye.
Freeman. Whoops, sorry. Holzbauer.
Abstain.
Larson.
Aye. Motion adopted. Mr. Leo Holzbauer is appointed secretary for the Water Management Board. The next item on the agenda is to adopt the final agenda. Does anyone want to make a motion to adopt the final agenda?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Ms. Mayans Bailey.
Yesterday, the department received a subpoena, which requires compliance on July 14. I would request that the board amend the agenda and add under the Dakota Bay Water Permit Application Number 8744-3, an opportunity for me to make an oral motion regarding that subpoena. Additionally, seated with me is John Katilnik, counsel for the South Dakota Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. Their department also received a subpoena, and I believe Mr. Katilnik would like to make a motion regarding that subpoena as well.
Sir, do you have a motion to make?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Again, John Katilnik, staff attorney for Game, Fish, and Parks. We would like to just reiterate a lot of what Ms. Ann Mines Bailey has stated. We'd like that on the agenda and the opportunity to address the subpoena that we received yesterday.
Does anyone want to make, does anyone on the board want to make a motion to amend the final agenda for today?
Mr. Chairman, this is John Hines, the attorney for the McCook Lake Recreation Area Association. Could I respond to the motions that the attorneys for Daner and Game Fish and Parks have made?
Well, the agenda has to be amended first, and then you will have the opportunity to respond to Ms. Mines Bailey's request.
I understand, Mr. Larson. I guess I'm raising an issue of procedure that I believe the motion to amend this agenda violates the open meetings law in South Dakota. But if you would like me to address that after the motion is made, I guess that doesn't make procedural sense to me, but I'll defer to you, Mr. Chairman.
In what rule are you contending that violates the open meetings law?
Mr. Chairman, so the Water Management Board is a political subdivision of the state of South Dakota and is subject to the open meetings laws. 125-1.1 requires that the agenda be posted for 24 hours immediately preceding the meeting. I understand a proposed agenda is a proposed agenda until finalized, but I can find no South Dakota law, rule, court ruling, or attorney general opinion that allows the addition of items. The public would have no notice of the item that's going to be considered. Ms. Bailey emailed the parties at 5:48 p.m. last night, informing us some motion would be made, but the parties have no knowledge of what that motion will be, so we would have no opportunity to have prepared for it. So, Mr. Chairman, under the South Dakota codified laws, I don't believe the addition of these items is appropriate. And even if there is a provision for allowing the addition of these items, no adequate notice has been given to the parties or to the public.
Well, you served the subpoena, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
And who did you serve it upon?
Ms. Bailey and the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks.
And did you serve it upon this board?
Yes. Well, it was transmitted to the board.
And so you're saying you're not prepared to argue if Ms. Mines Bailey is allowed to argue against your motion?
Mr. Chairman, I think that the question is not about arguing the merits of the subpoena. It's whether the board should consider some action item that was not noticed on the agenda.
The board chair would like to take a moment to consult with counsel. Mr. McVeigh, can I call you?
Yes, you guys want to take a 5 minute?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Okay. 5 minute break. The counsel would like to call the meeting back to order. Mr. Hines, I cannot find a record that the board was actually served the subpoena. Additionally, you served the subpoena a day before today's meeting with a 2-day compliance. And you were given notice of the challenge to your subpoena yesterday by Ms. Mines Bailey. Therefore, you had noticed that it was going to be challenged. And I can't find any case law, and we don't know of any case law that says the board cannot add an agenda item with a proper motion. Additionally, the statute 126-19.1, that gives a subpoena power to the board, not to council. So at this time, I would entertain a motion by the board to amend the final agenda for today.
Mr. Chairman, if I'm, this is Bjork, if I may ask a question, what is the motion to say? What are we amending?
We would be amending the agenda for today to allow Ms. Mines Bailey to orally argue a motion to quash the subpoena that was issued by Attorney Hines. So we would be adding another agenda item. And after consulting with counsel, there's no procedural rule that prohibits the board from amending the agenda. Because again, this is just a proposed agenda.
To keep things moving, I'm going to make that motion.
Do I have a second to amend the agenda for today's meeting to allow Ms. Mines Bailey to argue an oral motion to quash?
I'll make a second, and I think the motion includes Ms. Mines Bailey and also the gentleman from
Mr. Kotelnik from Game Fish and Parks.
Mr. Yeah. Kotelnik.
Yes, this is Board Member Comas. I'll second the motion.
Okay. Can we have a roll call?
Bjork.
Aye.
Comas.
Aye.
Dixon.
Aye.
Holzbauer.
Aye.
And Larson.
Aye. The motion to amend the agenda to allow Game Fish and Parks Council and Council for the Water or for the Water Board or Water
Water
argue a motion to quash is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bjork. I make a motion to adopt the agenda as amended.
Okay. Do I have a second to adopt the agenda as amended?
Dixon, second.
Take a roll call, please.
Bjork.
Aye.
Comas.
Aye.
Dixon.
Aye.
Holzbauer.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye. Mr. McVeigh, where do we want to put this on the agenda then? Do you want to hear that?
I would recommend putting it along with the consideration. Oh, I'm sorry, I lost it here. The consideration of the Dakota Bay water permit application number 8744-3. Okay. The 10 o'clock agenda item.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is are the any conflicts, disclosures, and requests for state board waivers. Any conflicts by any board members? Hearing none, we'll move on to the next item, which is to adopt the May 3rd, 2023 board meetings. Do we have a motion to adopt the May 3rd, 2023 board minutes?
Mr. Chairman, this is Bjork. Still moved.
Do I have a second?
Board Member Comas, second.
Do I have a roll call?
Bjork.
Aye.
Comas.
Aye.
Dixon.
Aye.
Goldsbauer.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye. The May 3rd, 2023 board minutes are adopted. The next item on the agenda is to set the October 4th and 5th, 2023 meeting dates and locations. Mr. Duvall, do we have room there in here?
That would be our suggestion, those dates at the Matthew Training Center.
Okay. Starting at 9:30 on the 4th?
That's typically when we start, yes.
Okay. Do we have a motion to set that meeting for October 4th at 9:30 in Pier at the Training Center?
Board Member Gomez, so moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Take a roll call, please.
Bjork.
Aye.
Comas.
Aye.
Dixon.
Aye.
Goldsbauer.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye. The October 4th and 5th 2023 meeting is set to begin on October 4th at 9:30 at the Massey Training Center in Pier, South Dakota. The next item on the agenda is the public comment period in accordance with SDCL 1-25-1. Do we have any individuals that wish to make public comments? Hearing none, let's move on to the next item, which is an update on DANR activities.
Chairman, this is Eric Gronlund. I have nothing for the board at this time. I would like to acknowledge that Representative Mike Weisgram is in attendance here in Pier.
Thank you, Mr. Gronlund. Next item is the status and review of water rights litigation.
This is David McVeigh, Board Counsel. There's nothing for the report as far as litigation. The Power Tech still remains waiting for the court to act on a motion for a consolidated record, and that's where it sits. And there's nothing else.
Any questions from the board of Mr. McVeigh? Hearing none, the next item on the agenda is to administer the oath to the Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources staff.
To each of you swear the testimony you give today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Okay, Mr. Duvall, the next item is the cancellation considerations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your board packet, you should have received a list, a table with a list of all the cancellation considerations that are before you today. There are not that many this time. Just some background on what's going on with cancellations. It's possible that once a water right permit is issued, it can be canceled for basically three reasons. One is not construction. The other two reasons deal with abandonment of it, just flat out not going to use the water anymore, or it's possible to also forfeit them due to non-use of water. And if you look at your table, there is one of the headings up there is the reason, and the AF are the abandonment and forfeiture, and the NC stands for non-construction. On the list that you have before you, they are all irrigation permits. Each one of these people have had contact from the department. Most of these were through Jenny McMath, who's now retired, via the irrigation questionnaire, where people simply indicate they're no longer interested in irrigating. And the last four deal with systems that were never constructed within their construction period. So each one of these people then received notice of hearing, of this hearing today, and they have the opportunity in response to that notice to oppose the cancellation if they wish. We did not get any feedback from anybody with any of these permits that they were concerned with the cancellation. The chief engineer is recommending cancellation of each one for the reasons listed. So that's where those things stand.
We have a motion to adopt the cancellation considerations.
Board Member Coleman. Go ahead, Mr. Bork.
Go ahead, Chad. I'm still looking.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to adopt the cancellations as recommended.
We have a second to that motion.
Bjork, second.
Your roll call, please.
Bjork.
Aye.
Gomez.
Aye.
Gibson.
Aye.
Holzbauer.
Aye.
And Larson.
Aye. Motion is adopted. The cancellation considerations as set forth by DNR. Next item is future use reviews. Mr. Duvall.
Okay, also, again, in your board packet, you received a list of future use permits that are subject to review. Every 7 years, once a future use permit is issued, it has to come back before this board for review, basically to see whether or not there's a need to retain that future use permit into the future. So in preparation for that, each one of these four entities, West River Water Development District, Lincoln County Rural Water System, and the City of Sioux Falls was contacted because they held these future use permits and were asked to let us know whether or not they wanted to keep them and what basis they had for retaining it into the future. We received responses back from each one of them. That based upon their response, the chief engineer made a recommendation and a notice was published in the papers that in the counties where these future use areas are located, or where their service areas are located, excuse me. That public notice gives anybody the opportunity to intervene, to oppose one of these future use reviews, and we receive nothing in response to the public notices. So our recommendation is that each one of these be allowed to remain in effect for an additional 7 years.
Do I have a motion from the board to adopt the chief engineer's recommendation that each future use permit remain in effect for the next 7 years?
Mr. Chairman, this is the board. I'll make that motion.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Dixon, second.
Motion is adopted. Can I hear the roll call, please?
York?
Aye.
Gomez?
Abstain.
Dixon?
Aye.
Holzbauer?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye. Chief Engineer's recommendation is adopted and approved by the board. Next item is unopposed water permits issued based on Chief Engineer's recommendation.
Again, in your board packet, you received a list of water permits that were issued by the Chief Engineer based upon his recommendation. And if you recall at the last board meeting, there was some discussion concerning when we get comments on an application, and maybe I'll back up a step and explain this. When that notice is put in the paper, people have two opportunities to intervene. Well, one to intervene. That's filing a petition in opposition. People can also file what are known as comments, and comments do not result in a contested case hearing before this board. But what the law provides is that those comments need to be provided to you, the board, for you to see. At the prior meeting, the comments were provided to you in your board packet, but there was no specific agenda item concerning those comments. For this board meeting, there is a specific item, and we did receive a comment concerning a water permit application number 8745-3 for USD. And I will just provide you some background on that. You should have the comment in your packet. About a year ago, we became aware that USD had developed a geothermal heating cooling system for a campus building because they were intending to re-inject the water, pump water out of the ground, out of the lower Missouri aquifer, and then re-inject it. They were having problems with their injection well, and so they were discharging to Vermilion's storm sewer system. Vermilion did not like that. They contacted us about it, and when we found out that USD was doing this, we told them they needed to have a water right permit. That, in fact, should have been obtained first before they started, but be that as it may, eventually we told USD that they could not continue using water without a permit and asked them to submit a water permit application. What prompted that conversation is we found out that they were going to be doing some more investigating to see whether or not their injection well, if they could drill more injection wells or whatever it took to get that system working. We told them in the interim they should apply for a permit because they didn't know they could pull that off yet or not. So this permit is a little bit different. We recommended a one-time volume of water to allow them to continue discharging while they try to get their system operating with these other injection wells. And so on this application, it was for a specific volume of water for one-time use, and then after that, it would be non-consumptive. And this was to get them permitted while they were trying to figure out whether or not they can get their injection well system working. If they can't get it working, then they would need to come back in for another permit. And I don't know what their plans would be. That remains to be seen. So in response to the public notice, we made the city of Vermilion aware of the application because they were concerned with it. And they had some comments concerning the discharge of the water to their storm sewer system. So that is where things stand. The comment was provided. They understand that it's a one-time use of water and that they would, the university will need to come back in for another permit if they intend to continue doing what they're doing. And I would not be surprised if that happened and they want to continue discharging, that the city of Vermilion at that point would file a petition in opposition. But at this point, it's just a comment with their concerns listed. Questions?
Some questions from the board? Do we have a motion to adopt the chief engineer's recommendation for water permit application number 8745-3 for the University of South Dakota?
This is Ron. The situation with this is when it was public noticed, it was public notice for to be issued based on the chief engineer's recommendation unless it was opposed. There was no petition in opposition, so the permit is actually issued.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bjork. So we don't have to take any action then?
No,
that's
I don't.
My understanding from...
My understanding was for the reason for putting it on the agenda, if you had a question as about the comment or even about the application, probably you have an opportunity because it's on the agenda to raise that question. I don't think a motion of any kind is necessary. It was basically for your opportunity to tell us a concern or thoughts.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask Mr. Duvall a question? This is Board Member Comas.
Yes, sir.
This item will, again, you said no action is recommended or needed in your opinion, Mr. Duvall. However, there will be a notation in the minutes of this conversation. And where I'm going with that is that would suffice as opposed to a motion to acknowledge. Is that, can you talk to that?
Well, it'll certainly.
The minutes will reflect.
Well, this is Board Council. So I don't necessarily believe that a motion to acknowledge is necessary or appropriate. Primarily the purpose is that, you know, when the chief engineer can approve the water rate since no petition in opposition was filed. So that's kind of a done deal, but people in the public can make comments on those water rights. And so we decided that it would be appropriate that the board were be able to hear those comments and ask any questions they may have regarding the application, regarding the comment, or something to that effect, to give the public the opportunity to essentially have their voices heard in, you know, in the context. Since the chief engineer has acted under their own statutory authority to actually issue the permit, nothing further would be required from the board. It's merely an opportunity for you to be aware and to hear what the public's, you know, position is on any particular water right. So, long story short, I don't believe that a motion to acknowledge is necessary. Merely the fact that it was discussed and is on the record would be adequate.
Thank you, Mr. McVeigh. And then there will be a notation of it in the agenda, or excuse me, in the minutes.
Right. Is there a representative from the city of Vermilion here that sent up the comments that we can ask questions or?
We did not provide notice to the city of Vermilion, basically because the permit's been issued at this point in time.
Okay.
And I think Mr. Duvall, if I may, Mr. Chairman, you had indicated there will just be a note of this conversation in the minutes. Again, not a motion, I understand that. Not a motion to acknowledge, I understand that, but just a note in the minutes, correct?
It will be in the minutes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Let's move on to the next item, which is to consider the validation of recognized vested water right claim number 815-3, South Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks for Mina Lake. Mr. Grunlin?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Good morning, Board. To reiterate, this is the validation of recognized vested water right claim 815-3 for Mina Lake in Edmonds County. Real similar to what we did at May in the May meeting for Lake Alvin. Very similar discussion here. There was a vested water right claim filed by Game, Fish, and Parks for Mina Lake in 1961. Mina Lake is a dam impoundment on Snake Creek in Edmonds County. At that time, back in 1961, the claim stated the amount to be as required to fill the lake to the outlet elevation, approximately 2,568 acre feet per year. That was standard practice in the time for that amount of water to be reflective of three times the surface area, to account for evaporation yearly. Back when this was originally filed in 1961, there wasn't a mechanism in state law for public notice or validation of impoundments or natural lakes to which Game Fish and Parks had placed filings on. The claims were simply filed with us as recognized vested water right claims and protected accordingly. In 1986, the state legislature enacted statutes that provided for a process for validation, which included public notice. We went through extensive public notice on all of these recognized vested water right claims in all these counties. And those statutes provided that no hearing be held unless a petition to impose is filed, and then further directed the board just to proceed with validating the uncontested vested water right claims. In the cases where there was a petition filed, the board is to hear that matter and determine it. Back in 1988, when these public notices occurred, the chief engineer, then John Hatch was the chief engineer, filed notice of intent to oppose validation of just about all of Game Fish and Parks vested water right claims for lakes, basically to be able to further quantify them on an actual elevation or volume, actual volume storage. In the case of Minot Lake, the opposition was to allow for the claim to be amended to include the spillway elevation, correct the amount of water claimed, and add any amendments or qualifications necessary to clarify the claim. Recently, as part of reconstruction of the spillway at Minot Lake, Game Fish and Parks provided us as-built plans, which included the primary spillway surveyed elevation in. Therefore, validation of the vested water right claim can proceed. It's our recommendation that this vested water right claim 815-3 be validated for sufficient water to maintain the water level in Minot Lake to the spillway elevation of 1413.64 feet mean sea level based on the NAVD datum. The vested water right is to have a priority date based on the original date of filing, August 17th of 1961. This elevation of the existing The elevation set is the same after reconstruction it was of the original one, so it is the exact same elevation. Just for the board's information, at that elevation, the approximate storage capacity of Minot Lake is just over 10,000 acre feet of water. So it's a fairly big impoundment up in Edmonds County and a resource up there with housing as well as recreation associated with it. So with that, I would take any questions from the board.
Any questions from the board?
Mr. Chairman, this is Bjork. I'd make a motion to validate, recognize vested water right claim 815-3 for Minot Lake.
And do I have a second to Mr. Bjork's motion?
Board Member Comas, I'll second.
Okay, can I have a roll call, please?
Bjork?
Aye.
Comas?
Aye.
Gibson?
Aye.
Wolfbauer?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye. Motion is adopted to recognize the vested water right claim number 815-3 for Minot Lake. Next item on the agenda is to consider the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and final decision in the matter of water permit application number 2850-2, the Elk Mountain Water Users Association, Inc.
This is McVeigh, Board Council. So this matter came before the board on May 3, 2023. The applicant, Elk Mountain Water Users Association, was represented by J. Scott James. The petitioners, Daniel and Dalton Stearns, were represented by Robert Galbraith. And the petitioners, Thomas and Araceleo Martinez, were represented by Matthew Nas. And Ann Mines Bailey represented the Department of Agricultural and Natural Resources Water Rights Program. The Water Rights Program filed proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law, and the interveners Araslio and Thomas Martinez filed certain alternative or objections, we'll say, to those findings of fact and conclusions of law. Specifically, they objected to paragraph 19 as incomplete, and yet they proposed no alternative finding of fact, and their assertion of incompleteness does not affect the fact set forth in paragraph, the facts set forth in paragraph 19. The same occurred as to paragraph 27, again arguing that the paragraph was incomplete, and no alternative finding of fact was proposed, and nothing asserted in their objection overturned the asserted fact in paragraph 27 itself. The same in paragraph 31, they objected as it was incomplete, proposed no alternative finding of fact, and did not affect the facts as set forth in paragraph 31. And finally, it's to paragraph 41, they objected as it was incomplete, and again provided no alternative finding, and did not upset the findings of paragraph 41. Finally, they objected to the conclusions, paragraph 11, which essentially related to the best practices of having an aquifer water pressure test to determine the health of the aquifer. That conclusion of law was basically an opinion stated by the interveners, which they argued at the hearing, and did not address the water rights policy of using the best available evidence when reviewing the application. So the board voted to issue the permit and to, let's see, the board voted to approve the water permit 2082-2. It granted a priority date of July 7, 22, and included the following conditions. The first condition is that in accordance with SDCL 46-1-14 and 46-2A-20, permit 2850-2 be issued for a 20-year term pursuant to SDCL 46-2A-21. The 20-year term may be deleted at any time during the 20-year period or following its expiration. If the 20-year term is not deleted at the end of the term, the permit may either be canceled or amended with a new term limitation of up to 20 years. Permit 2850-2 may also be canceled for non-construction forfeiture, abandonment, or 3-PIP permit violations pursuant to SDCL 46-1-12, 46-5-37.1, and ARSD 74:02:01:37. The second qualification was that the well may be located near domestic wells and other wells which may obtain water from the same aquifer. The well owner, under the permit, shall control withdrawals so there is not a reduction of needed water supplies in adequate domestic wells or in adequate wells having prior water rights. The third qualification is that the well authorized by permit 2850-2 shall be constructed by a licensed well driller, and construction of the well and installation of the pump shall comply with the Water Management Board Well Construction Rules, Chapter 74:02:04, and the well casing pressure, the well casing pressure grouted bottom to top pursuant to ARSD Section 74:02:04:28. The fourth qualification is that the permit holder shall report to the chief engineer annually the amount of water withdrawn from the Madison Aquifer. And the fifth and final qualification is that water permit number 2850-2 appropriates up to 145 acre feet of water annually. And so that is to the board for approval.
Do I hear a motion to adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and final decision in the matter of water permit application number 2850-2 Elk Mountain Water Users Association, Inc., as prepared by the Water Rights Program?
Mr. Chairman, this is Bjork.
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Chairman, Board Member Comas, second.
Thank you. Can we have a roll call, please?
Bjork.
Aye.
Comas.
Aye.
Dixon.
Aye.
Holzbauer.
Aye.
And Larson.
Aye. Findings of fact, conclusions of law, and final decision in the matter of water permit application number 2850-2 Elk Mountain Water Users Association, Inc. is hereby adopted. Let's move on to the next item, which is to consider the future use water permit application number 8754-3 Lewis and Clark Regional Water System.
Mr. Chair, Ann Mines Bailey on behalf of the Chief Engineer in the Water Rights Program. I believe Mr. Taylor, John Taylor, is on the line. He represents Lewis and Clark. This particular matter is a little different than most water rights that we have coming in before the board. This particular water rate falls under the guise of South Dakota Codified Law 46.5.20.1. And that particular statute requires that the legislature must approve the appropriation because it seeks to appropriate more than 10,000 acre feet a year. Mr. Gronlund has asked me, and I have discussed with Mr. Taylor, what we'd like to do is provide the board with the procedure for how this water permit is going to progress. And then Mr. Gronlund, I believe, will give you broad strokes about what the report and the chief engineer's recommendation provides, if that's acceptable to the board.
Yes, it is.
I believe Mr. Duval emailed you all a sheet that has pertinent laws and regulations. So these are the laws, that sheet comprises the laws and regulations that are applicable to this type of appropriation. Looking at 46.5.20.1 and reading it in harmony with the rest of the title and the applicable regulations, this is the procedure that we believe is applicable. Upon receipt of Lewis and Clark's application, the chief engineer had 60 days to process the and formulate a report and a recommendation, just like any other water rate. It also goes through the regular public notice procedure as set forth in 46.2A4, with the variation that the notice does not provide the date of the evidentiary hearing. That is held at a later time, along with the opportunity to exercise the auto delay provisions set forth in statute. Once it was public noticed, the matter is set for the board to take official action to present the matter to the South Dakota Legislature. You may see in 46.5.20.1 that any application for appropriation of water pursuant to this chapter in excess of 10,000 acre feet annually shall be presented by the Water Management Board to the legislature for approval prior to the board's acting upon the application. So the chief engineer's intent is that once the board decides by majority vote to present this application to the legislature, the application, the report done by water rights staff, the recommendation of the chief engineer, the public notice, any comments that were received or petitions in opposition, and then the minutes of this meeting will be transmitted to the legislature. For the board's knowledge, this was public noticed. My understanding is that no comments were received and no petitions in opposition. So the only parties to this action are Lewis and Clark and the chief engineer. Once that's transmitted to the legislature needs to approve. The statutes do not provide a process whereby the legislature, they don't provide how the legislature has to process that. It just requires the legislature's approval prior to the board's action. Once the legislature has approved the application, it will then be scheduled for a hearing before the board. Evidence will be presented at that time, and the board will be able to take official action on the application. And from there, it will proceed just like any other water rate. Are there any questions? I know I ran through that pretty quick.
So procedurally, we need to, as the board, this is Chair Larson, need to vote today whether to present this to the legislature, correct?
Yes. I believe the statute requires a majority vote to present to the legislature. And I will also note that the legislature approval does not mandate approval of the water permit application. The board is free to function within its power to grant or deny the application, but you're not to act on it prior to the legislature's approval.
Any questions, comments from other board members?
Ms. Mines Bailey, or excuse me, Mr. Larson, may I, Board Member Comas, may I ask Ms. Mines Bailey?
Yes, of course.
Just wanted to be clear, Ms. Mines Bailey, I believe you'd indicated after the legislature would proceed or authorize, then it would come back to the board for the hearing, correct?
Correct. It would then, once the legislature has approved, it would come back to the board and proceed through just like any other water rate.
And there's no opportunity. I don't have a concern about this, but then there would be no other opportunities for interveners or anything like that at that time. In other words, that time for interveners to petition has already expired, correct?
Yes, the public notice was issued prior to today so that we could define the parties and present any opposition comments that would have been submitted in response to the public notice so that could all be transmitted to the legislature at one time.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Bjork.
Yes.
I have one more question for Ms. Mines Bailey. If the legislature approves, it then comes back to the board for our approval as a board, would it not go through the process of public notice and opposition again?
No, it would not. It would be the same as, such as some of the applications that we've done deferrals on for further like aquifer performance testing. It's just a break allowing more gathering of information.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this is Board Member Dixon. May I ask Ann Mines Bailey a question?
Yes, you may.
Is there any reason not to present this, take it forward to the legislature?
We received no comments. We received no petitions in opposition. I am not aware of a reason why the board wouldn't want to present this to the legislature.
Thank you.
So procedurally, then we just need to take a vote on whether we want to present this or wish to present it to the legislature.
Mr. Chair, if you would like, Mr. Gromlin would be able to give the board broad strokes of the application and the results of the report and recommendation so that the board would have some foundation upon which to base their their presentation to the legislature.
This is Larson. I would find that beneficial.
Chairman Lott, Larson, and members of the committee, Adam Mathewitz was the lead groundwater engineer that reviewed this application. Just to let you know why I'm pinch hitting for him today is we actually put out for some quotes for some basically fixes or refurbishments of some observation wells. We got a nibble from a drilling company, and the only day that they could make it to have, they wanted to be go out on site was today. So I sent Adam in out to the hills, and that's why I'm here today. But future use water permit application 8754-3 was filed by the Lewis and Clark Regional Water System. It proposes to appropriate and reserve for future use 19,121 acre feet annually from the Missouri Elk Point Aquifer. This application, if approved, does not authorize construction of works or application of water to beneficial use at this time. The future use area is located approximately 3 miles southwest of Vermilion, South Dakota. The Vermilion Elk Point Aquifer underlies approximately 219,100 acres in Clay, Union, and Yankton counties in southeastern South Dakota. At this location, the aquifer is generally unconfined, and water movement in the aquifer is generally towards the southeast. The guiding law in this matter is a little bit different than what the board is used to on a normal water permit application. You know, in 46-2A-9, we have to look at whether unappropriated water is available, the potential for unlawful impairment of existing rights, as well as whether it's a beneficial use and in the public interest. In the case of future use reservations, the criteria is different in one way. There's a statute 2A-10, and instead of the unlawful impairment of existing rights criteria, in that place is that the quantity of water reserve will be needed by the entity for the proposed use. The impairment of existing rights would come later after the future use permit is in place and that entity comes in to construct and place the water to beneficial use. So as Ann said, since this request exceeds 10,000 acre feet of water, the application must be presented by the Water Management Board prior to the legislature and then comes back to the board for final action. The last time an application for greater than 10,000 acre feet came before this board was in between 1994 and 1995, and coincidentally it was the Lewis and Clark Regional Water System that filed that application when it was in its infancy. As this board is acutely aware, one of the primary things we look at is water availability, whether there's unappropriated water available, and in doing so, we look towards 46.6.3.1, which we often call the anti-groundwater mining statute, that the amount of water withdrawn annually does not exceed the estimated recharge. And we also use a review of observation wells, and that's largely what Adam's report focuses on, is those two criteria. In South Dakota, we have 36 observation wells constructed into the Missouri Elk Point Aquifer. Overall, these observation wells show water levels respond well to climatic conditions, rising during wet weather periods, early spring snowmelt and precipitation, and declining to stable water levels during drier periods. Several of the Missouri Elk Point Aquifer observation well hydrographs show a general, gradual, long-term downward trend because they are so close to the Missouri River. This downward trend is basically an entrenchment or a scouring of the channel bottom of the Missouri River bed, and in some places a widening of the channel leading to lower water levels despite the river having the same rate of flow. Lowering of the water level in the Missouri River downstream of Gavin Point's dam and the subsequent lowering of the water level in the Missouri Elk Point Aquifer observation wells in close proximity to the river shows a strong hydrologic connection between the river and the Missouri Elk Point aquifer. The lowering of the water levels in the aquifer, especially in close proximity to the Missouri River, is not a sign of overappropriation of the Missouri Elk Point aquifer. The observation wells, again, just simply show the connection between the river and the aquifer. The estimated recharge from the study to the Missouri Elk Point aquifer, based on the aerial extent, is 3.8 inches per year. That, taking over the 219,100 acres, yields an estimated recharge from the observation well analysis of 39,382 acre feet. However, the South Dakota Geological Survey conducted an extensive study to more accurately quantify the percentage of induced recharge from pumping in Lewis and Clark's well field. It was determined that 84.6% of the water pumped from the well field is water that's induced from the Missouri River. Lewis and Clark is currently permitted for 53,442 acre feet, and this application proposes to reserve an additional 19,121 acre feet for a total of 72,563 acre feet of water. Again, applying that 84.6 capture from that study of the South Dakota Geological Survey and full development of existing Lewis and Clark permits, and this application would equate to a little over 61,000 acre feet of induced recharge from the Missouri River. So when we combine that original recharge that's taking place over the aerial extent and the induced recharge, we end up with 130,770.2 acre feet of recharge if Lewis and Clark was at its full development. Currently, the discharge from all the uses, including Lewis and Clark, the other municipalities, and the irrigation, is 118,276 acre feet per year. So based on the hydrologic budget and the observation well data, there's a reasonable probability unappropriated water is available. So the other criteria that I mentioned early on for the approval of a future use permit is the demonstrated need. So Lewis and Clark currently holds 53,442 acre feet in permits, which equates to a firm capacity of 47.71 million gallons per day. Lewis and Clark has a desired system firm capacity of 60 million gallons per day, which requires a total annual volume of the 72,563 acre feet. This increase in annual volume is needed to supply current and future demand as the city completes its target expansion by 2030 to 2031. So, to my satisfaction, Lewis and Clark has demonstrated a need for the water for the regional water system. Based on that, the recommendation is for approval and that this Water Management Board should present the application to the legislature. That's based on the reasonable probability unappropriated water is available, as well as the application showing and demonstrating a need for the water. With that, I stand by for questions.
Any questions from board members? Hearing none, I think procedurally then we need to vote as to whether to present the chief engineer's recommendations to the legislature on this permit of 8754-3.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bjork. I made a motion, but I was muted.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to remake the motion to submit this application to the legislature with a recommendation for approval.
Do we have a second to that motion?
Hold Bauer, second.
And have a roll call, please.
York?
Aye.
Gomez?
Aye.
Dixon?
Aye.
Holzbauer? Leo?
Aye.
Chairman Larson.
Aye. Right. The board is recommending that the water, or has approved the chief engineer's request that future use water permit application number 8754-3 for the Lewis and Clark Regional Water System be presented to the South Dakota Legislature. Next item on the agenda. Yes.
If I may interrupt, this is Bjork. Can I request a biology break?
Yes, you may, and it'll be granted.
Thank you.
It's 10:46. Let's come back at in 10 minutes at 10:56. All right, I'm going to call the meeting back to order. The next item on the agenda is Council for Water Rights Program's oral motion to quash a subpoena issued by Attorney Hines. Ms. Mines Bailey, you have the floor.
Thank you. Yesterday afternoon at approximately 2:22, I was informed that the department received a subpoena duces tecum in the matter of the water permit application number 8744-3 Dakota Bay LLC. The subpoena is addressed to Ann Mines Bailey, Assistant Attorney General, Attorney for the South Dakota Department of Ag and Natural Resources. Within an hour, I was speaking with Mr. Hines. First, I just want to make it very clear, I don't think Mr. Hines' intent was that I would get served quite so close to the time for compliance. I failed to mention the subpoena requests certain documents or my presence at his office on July 14 at 3 p.m. I don't believe it was Mr. Hines' intent to give me notice of a subpoena so close to the time required for compliance. And he very graciously, when we spoke, agreed to increasing the amount of time to respond to the subpoena. However, I don't think increasing the amount of time to respond to the subpoena is sufficient. I don't believe I have any choice under the law but to ask the board to quash the subpoena. I have a number of reasons. First and foremost, the subpoena is issued in the name of Bill Larson, chair of the board, under 126.18, 126.19.1, and 15.645A. 15.645A is part of the chapter known as the Rules of Procedure in Circuit Court. Those rules are applicable only in circuit court. That caveat, that limitation, is found in SDCL 15.6.1. The 126.18 and 126.19.1 are part of what is known as the Administrative Procedures Act. Those two statutes provide, in general terms, the authority to conduct discovery and administrative hearings that are proceeding under 126. 126.19.1, however, provides the authority to administer oaths and issue subpoenas to the agency and officers thereof. 126.1 sub 1 defines agency for our purposes here as the board. So reading 19.1 with the understanding of agency, it is the agency, it's the board, and the board's officers that have the authority to issue a subpoena. Here, it was not issued under the board's authority or with a grant of the board's authority or the board's permission. Discovery is not automatic in administrative cases. If you look at 126.19.2, even though it's titled Depositions of Witnesses, the South Dakota Supreme Court's held that those titles don't control. But when you read the body of that statute, it refers to the board having discretion. It says that the board shall have power to cause the deposition or other discovery procedure to be conducted upon notice of the interested person, if any. So the board has a discretion to determine whether or not discovery should occur. That only makes sense when you look at administrative hearings. They function on a truncated period of time, and they deal with very narrow issues. So in this case, the board has not authorized discovery. There's no procedural order. There's been no motion to the board for a discovery request or for discovery measures. Therefore, I believe the subpoena should be quashed because it is not exercised, it does not properly exercise the authority of the board. If, however, the board should find that the rules of procedure in circuit courts, which would be that 15.6.45 statute that specifically discusses subpoenas, I would ask the board to quash the subpoena even under those rules. This subpoena is directed to me as counsel for the chief engineer. And I'll note first, my notice of appearance is very explicit. It says the chief engineer in the water rights program. The subpoena notes that I am the attorney for the South Dakota Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources. I am not counsel for the entire department. I am counsel for a specific program. I do not have access to everything in this matter held by the department. And even if I did, it would be protected under attorney-client privilege or work product privilege. What documents I have that would not be protected by privilege would have been documents or are documents that were given to me by Mr. Hines or that I access from the internet in general. And so those documents are equally accessible to Mr. Hines as they are to me. I also, that the subpoena was, and I hate to use the word served, it was received by the Department of Ag and Natural Resources. It was not received by me. It was not served upon me, though it was directed to me. It was not served upon the Office of the Attorney General, of whom I am an employee. So service is improper. It doesn't properly denote my position, and it asks for documents that are privileged. But if you want to go even further than that, under the rules of civil procedure in circuit courts, discovery is only allowed for relevant material. Here, the subpoena seeks any and all documents, records, notes, reports, or recordings that relate to or concern Michael Chicoine's proposed canal and application to alter lakeshore or bottomlands relating to McCook Lake. Michael Chicoine's and Dakota Bay LLC's water right permits and applications in Union County, South Dakota, the McCook Lake Recreation Area Association's petition for declaratory ruling, and House Bill 1134 from the 2023 session. First, I'll say alteration of shoreline is handled by the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks, not by the Department of Ag and Natural Resources. I don't understand how House Bill 1134 is relevant to a water permit application. Remember, this is only pertaining to the water permit application, and what is at issue is Mr. Chicoine's desire to have an appropriation from the Missouri Elk Point Aquifer for the purposes of filling a one-time fill of a canal, which will be constructed off of McCook Lake, and then additional water to maintain the level of the canal to counteract seepage or evaporation. So I am not entirely sure how McCook Lake Recreation Area Association's petition for declaratory ruling or 1134, House Bill 1134, are relevant to the four factors upon which this board must decide whether or not to issue that permit. I just ask the board to quash the subpoena, one, because it's not appropriate use of the board's authority. This is a run-of-the-mill water right. There's no need for discovery, and pretty much everything in the file is everything that the department would have regarding water permit application 8744-3. There is probably a lot more that I could say, but I feel like that's sufficient. And so I do ask that you quash the motion, and I thank you. Would you like to hear from Mr. Patelnik next? Or?
Yes. Ms. Mines-Bailey.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, board members. John Patelnik, staff attorney for Game Fish and Parks. First, I want to say it's a pleasure to be in front of this water management board for the first time. Working with GF&P, we have no shortage of puns, so I appear to be a fish out of water at this point. So I'm not familiar with all your guys' rules and procedures, but the little knowledge that I do have, it would piggyback off of a lot of what Attorney Mines-Bailey has just said. The department would be requesting that you quash the subpoena that we received, requesting almost exactly the same materials. For the three main reasons. One, Ms. Mines-Bailey has already addressed it, that this subpoena does not have the authority necessary to request the documents because it's not coming from the board. It's coming straight from the attorney. Second, even if the board were to find that this subpoena was valid, the department objects to the scope of it. It's overly broad. It's asking for any and all documentation. We're not sure even what specific documentation he's asking for. We have received open records requests from Mr. Hines, I believe, which we've complied with, which is, again, essentially the application that Mr. Chiquin has submitted and all the supplemental documents that he submitted to the department as well. For the record, the department has not made a determination on that application, so I would say it's still a pending application. And at this point, there's no decision that has been made by the department. And then lastly, as Ann Mines-Bailey noted in the request, I'm not sure if you have a copy of the subpoena in front of you, but items 2, 3, and 4 of the requests, the department couldn't comply even if they wanted to because it's materials that the department does not have, namely the water rights permits and applications in Union County, the McCook Lake Recreation Area Association petition for declaratory ruling, and then finally again House Bill 1134, which is public knowledge and is easily accessible by Mr. Hines. So for those reasons, the department would piggyback off of Ann Mines-Bailey motion to quash and request that you quash the subpoena that was delivered to GF&P.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Hines, your opportunity to argue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is John Hines. I'm the attorney for the McCook Lake Recreation Area Association, who is a party in opposition of record to the application 8744-3. I'll try to touch everyone's points. I might take it a little bit out of order. I just wanted to say first that if there are any modifications or corrections to the subpoena that would satisfy Game Fish and Parks and Ms. Mines-Bailey on behalf of the chief engineer, be happy to make those revisions and, if necessary, have a new subpoena issued today. That's not going to obviously affect the timing between yesterday and today. But as Ms. Mines-Bailey stated, the association is more than willing to allow for additional time for these subpoenas, keeping in mind that the deadline for submitting exhibits on the petition for declaratory ruling is July 21st. And my assumption would be that if the board sets the application for the water right for the same August 2 date, that my assumption would be that the evidence deadline for that would also be July 21st. If the board was willing to extend that, then we could afford additional time for the production of the documents. But I'll address the other issues that were raised by Ms. Mines-Bailey and Mr. Kotelnik. So on the statutory authority for the subpoena, and as the chairman previously stated, 1-26-19.1 clearly gives the board the authority to have subpoenas issued. If you look at 1-26.18, it's also clear that in contested cases, the parties have the right to present evidence on issues of fact and may have subpoenas issued to compel attendance of witnesses and production of evidence. Now, I don't see any administrative rules in the board's procedures that explains a process for having a subpoena issued, but when you read South Dakota Codified Law 15-6-45A, which Ms. Mines-Bailey correctly pointed out is in a chapter titled Circuit Courts, but as she also pointed out, the Supreme Court has held that titles aren't controlling, you can see in the text of that code that it specifically refers back to 1-26-19.1, and then it goes on to say that any attorney of record in any action or proceeding or collateral hearing, civil or criminal, may issue subpoenas. And it goes on to say that that subpoena has to be transmitted to the clerk of court or secretary or other filing officer of the board or tribunal. So if this is not the proper procedure for having a subpoena issued, much of that language would be meaningless. What board or tribunal are we speaking of? The courts don't have boards or tribunals. This rule clearly states that the attorney of record may issue a subpoena in the name of the board, which was done. And that subpoena was transmitted to the board. It was emailed to Mr. McVeigh, and it was mailed to the board. We could have an affidavit of mailing submitted to the board if the board desires it. So that subpoena has both been issued and transmitted under that rule. Now, some of the other items with regard to the content or the scope of the subpoena. 13 days ago, Ms. Mines-Bailey argued to this board that the declaratory ruling petition and the water rights issue were so intertwined that they must be heard together. So I don't understand how now the position could be that these documents, which might be relevant to one, couldn't be relevant to another. They're absolutely relevant. My assumption, again, is that this board will set the water rights hearing for August 2nd on the same day as the petition for the declaratory ruling. So I don't believe it's appropriate for the Attorney General's office to decide what may or may not be relevant. This is a request for documents so that we can decide what would be relevant to submit to the board as evidence for these proceedings. And then to the extent that the attorneys general have raised that these subpoenas seek protected, privileged, or records that they don't have, obviously the association is not expecting any governmental agency to turn over privileged records. Nor would we expect them to produce records they do not have. So I believe I've covered all of the items that were addressed by the two attorneys. So I thank you for the time, and I'll entertain any questions or if there are any, or just turn it back over.
Any questions from the board members of either attorney?
Mr. Chairman, this is Bjork. I'm a little bit confused here because each of the attorneys are citing statutes differently. That's the only way I hearing it from here. I don't quite understand how the same they're being interpreted in a different manner or in a different way, but they're the same thing. Somehow we as a board need to make a decision based on certainly conflicting information from these two on the same statute. And maybe Mr. McVeigh can help us a little bit here as our board counsel in interpreting these particular statutes as these two attorneys are talking about.
Attorneys, this is what attorneys do. But
yes, indeed.
And I agree with you, Mr. Bjork. We may need some additional guidance from Mr. McVeigh. I do have a couple questions before we get to Mr. McVeigh, though. Mr. Hines, I'm chairman of the board. I did not receive a copy of the subpoena. And if you read, did you serve the subpoena on Rodney Chairman as pre-hearing chair?
So I'll answer that in a couple ways, Mr. Chairman. Again, this is John Hines for those listening, not watching. The rule requires that the subpoena be transmitted to the board. Now, in terms of who is the filing officer of the board, I'm not sure if that would be you or Mr. Freeman. The subpoena was directed to you, Mr. Chairman. So I don't know if that was received in the office. And, you know, as the board doesn't list any emails or other ways to communicate with the board members, it was mailed to the office.
Because I'm looking at 15645-A, and it says you as the attorney issuing the subpoena, if 15645-A applies, you must transmit a copy to the secretary or other filing officer of the board. As it stands now, I don't have it.
Right. It has been transmitted. And again,
not me.
Mr. Chairman, I would say that as is the case under South Dakota law, that transmission occurs when it is mailed. And so it was mailed on June 30th, at the same time that the issues were sent for service. And to Ms. Mines-Bailey's point, it was not our intent to create this logjam of time. We are operating with a externally shortened time frame due to Ms. Mines-Bailey's impending departure from the Attorney General's office, and we're sensitive to that. And again, we're willing to provide all the time necessary. But the subpoenas were transmitted. They were served on the agencies. We don't yet have returns of service as they were only served yesterday. Again, a little out of our control on that. But if any additional documents require service, we will ensure that they would be served today.
Well, today, it's not a valid subpoena because it doesn't matter whether you send it to the agency. I'm supposed to have a copy.
And again, Mr. Larson, we would draft new subpoenas and have them served today.
I have an additional question on the relevance of communications with Ms. Mines-Bailey and her client.
Again, the subpoena was not intended to obtain communications that are attorney-client privileged. It was intended to obtain communications regarding the shoreline alteration, the water rights permit application, the declaratory ruling, and HB 1134.
Does it state in your subpoena that you're not asking for attorney-client communications?
It does not specifically say that, no.
Mr. McVeigh, comments you would like to make to help assist the board?
Well, I think to discuss the legal import of everything that's been presented to the board.
I'm sorry, I can't understand you. To discuss the what?
To discuss the legal import and the relevant statutes, to me it would seem to be appropriate to hold an executive session. As contemplated by 126 and 125-2 sub 3, that those sections are specifically set forth to allow the board to consult with their legal counsel on matters presently pending. So I think that would be appropriate.
I would agree with that assessment, that the board go into an executive session at this time. We need a motion for that.
This is Bjork. I'll make that motion.
Do I have a second on that motion to go into executive session?
This is Board Member Comas. I'll second that. I would need a, I would also ask, and I'm sure Mr. Duvall will touch on this, is the procedure to accomplish that in this remote format. So I will second it.
Okay. Let's take a roll call.
York.
Aye.
Comas.
Aye.
Vinson.
Aye.
Goldflower. Leo. Larson.
Aye. The board will go into executive session.
All right, this is Chairman Larson. I'm going to call the meeting back. Call the meeting back to order, and returning from executive session. At this time, I would entertain a motion to quash the two subpoenas, Deuces Tecum, issued by John Hines on Ann Mines Bailey as attorney for DANR, and the second subpoena issued on Game Fish and Parks, based upon arguments of counsel and after considering SDCL 1-2618, 126-19, 126-19.1, and SDCL 15-645. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Bjork. So moved.
Okay, do I hear a second to the motion?
This is Dixon, second.
Okay. Can we please have a roll call?
Bjork.
Aye.
Comas.
Aye.
Dixon.
Aye.
Goldbauer.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye. The motion to quash the two subpoenas Deuces Tecum issued by John Hines on Ann Mines Bailey, Attorney Assistant Attorney General for BAMR and Game Fish and Park, are hereby granted. See, the subpoenas are considered quashed. Let's move on to the next item on the agenda, which is to schedule a special meeting of the Water Management Board to consider water permit application number 8744-3 Dakota Bay. Thoughts on scheduling?
Yeah, this is Ron Duvall. Well, what we believe the Water Management Board should do is schedule that water permit application for hearing on August 2nd, which is also the date scheduled for hearing on the McCook Lake declaratory ruling, and it would be 10 a.m. on August 2nd. And since it's a contested case, if board members can be here, that would be great. If not, we will try to make provision for to have any exhibits that may be submitted available to whoever's participating online.
Okay, so do I hear a motion to schedule a special meeting of the Water Management Board to consider water permit application number 8744-3 Dakota Bay on August 2nd, 2023, starting at 10 a.m. at the Matthews Training Center and Pier?
Correct.
Do I hear a motion? Do I hear a motion to adopt that recommendation?
Dixon, so moved.
Do I hear a second?
York, second.
Can we have a roll call, please?
York.
Aye.
Comas.
Aye.
Dixon.
Aye.
Goldbauer.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye. Therefore, the special meeting of the Water Management Board to consider water permit application number 8744-3 Dakota Bay is hereby set for August 2nd, 2023 at 10 a.m. at the Matthews Training Center in Pierce, South Dakota.
Mr. Chair,
is the last item on
one other, yes. One other item just to let everybody know. For the findings of fact, the signature page, I will be sending that to you for signature. Also for the board minutes that were adopted, I will send you the signature page. And also a document indicating that the board appointed Rodney Freeman as pre-hearing officer for next year. So you'll be getting those in the mail.
Okay, thank you. Do we need to clean up any housekeeping on the order quashing the subpoenas?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Your motion to adjourn the meeting.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. One order of housekeeping that, as you said, that just occurred to me. Since you have the statutory section in 19.1, which suggests that the board has the authority to issue subpoenas, theoretically, if anyone were inclined to, seek any sort of subpoena, they could, at any time file a motion with the pre-hearing chair to request that the board issue a subpoena. The statutes contemplate that. So if one were so inclined, they could theoretically do that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. McVeigh.
Mr. Chairman, this is John Hines. May I ask a question of Mr. McVeigh, just so that everyone's clear?
Yes.
Mr. McVeigh, in order to submit that motion to the pre-hearing chairman, how should that be submitted?
Well, I believe normally you'd file a motion with, it goes to you guys, right? It goes to water rights? To the water rights program, or do you file directly with Rodney? I can't remember how we did it last time.
Mr. Hines, my practice, this is Ann Hines Bailey on behalf of the chief engineer. My practice when I file motions before the pre-hearing chair is to send the hard copy because the statute requires service by mail or personal service. So I send a hard copy to Ron Duvall at the Foss building, and then I will email the PDF as well to both Ron Duvall and Mr. McVeigh.
Thanks, Ann.
Yep.
I appreciate that. I don't file a lot of motions to my own board, so I appreciate any assistance on that. Thank you.
Any other business to take up? Hearing none, do I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Second.
Dixon, Old second. Second.
We need a roll clock, or we just adjourn?
Voice vote.
Turn.
I think a voice vote is fine.
Okay. Meeting's adjourned.